And while we're in Iowa, where the first in the nation presidential contest is just 3 days away, let's ask the key question. Why do the Iowa caucuses matter so much? Joining us is Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University. Professor, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, take us back to the origins of the Iowa caucuses. How did they become this key element in Americans picking the president?
It's really Jimmy Carter's fault, because when the reforms came through after the Democratic Party kind of imploded in Chicago at the convention, this unknown governor from Georgia came to Iowa thinking he might run for president. And we called him Jimmy Who at the time, because we didn't know who he was. And when he came in, basically second behind uncommitted, but the media said, oh, Jimmy Carter won the Iowa caucuses. And then he went on to get the nomination and to win the election. There was a kind of sense that there was something going on in Iowa that was really interesting.
And that opportunity for Jimmy Carter came out of the aftermath of the chaos of the 1968 Democratic Convention.
It did, because what happened was the Democratic Party said, we need more inclusion, we need to bring in more people, and they sent out word to all the state Democratic Party organizations. And here in Ames, Iowa, the chair of the Iowa Democratic Party looked at it and said, oh my God, we've got to do all this paperwork. We don't have Xerox machines. We don't have faxes. We don't have the internet. And if we're going to have a caucus and follow the rules and then send on the results to the next level, which would be the county conventions, we'd better start early. And the only reason Iowa is first in the nation is because Iowa said, we got to do this by January, and none of the other states did. So what was first was basically the result of poor technology.
Now, we've been talking about the Democratic side. What about for Republicans? What was the first important Iowa caucus for Republicans?
Well, the Republicans really looked at what happened with Jimmy Carter and the media, you know, storm, basically. And they said, this is pretty good. And they got together, imagine that, and said, why don't we both parties do this at the same time? And 1976 was really the launching point. And after that, the Democrats and Republicans held their caucuses on the same night. The media came. The media center in Des Moines collected all that, and it became a bipartisan kind of collaborative thing. And New Hampshire joined in by saying, well, okay, we want to have our primary right after the Iowa caucuses. So 1 week after Iowa, we want to have a primary here. And that became institutionalized. And to this day in 2020, that's still how it's going to happen.
Has anybody become the nominee of the party without coming in, let's say, the top three in the Iowa caucus?
Nope.
Never.
I'm looking at right here at all the results from 1976 to 2016, which is the relevant time frame. I keep telling the media, I just did a huge interview with a Spanish language cable network. And they said, well, you know, who has to win in Iowa? Come in first. And I said, no, who has to come in first, second, or third? And it's not because Iowa has some sort of magic potion in its water. It's because the Iowa caucus attendees tend to basically reflect pretty much the partisans in all the rest of the states, the people, in other words, who vote in primaries in other states. Iowa is not way out in some weird field. It's very much part of the partisan mood of the time. So when the Republican Party was more moderate, you had more moderate Republicans in Iowa as well winning the caucuses. And when the Republicans became more conservative, Iowa Republicans were also moving in that direction.
But does the fact that Iowa is one of the whitest states in the country make it not as representative as it used to be?
The answer is Barack Obama won the Iowa caucuses and would never have become the candidate of the party and won the presidency if he hadn't won in Iowa. And when mostly white Iowa Democrats, who, by the way, can be very progressive, decided Barack Obama looks really good, voters, I think, in the Democratic Party and the rest of the country said, that's interesting. And you know, what I always say is, that if you had a place where the poll numbers were huge for, let's say, Cory Booker, then Iowa might be questionable. But frankly, this year, the poll numbers for minority candidates, who unfortunately have dropped out, were very poor in the rest of the country. And so Iowa, whatever happens on caucus night, I think, yes, you can make the case Iowa is too small, Iowa is too rural, Iowa is too, has too few minorities and is too white. But the people that Iowans choose on caucus night tend to resonate well with voters in other parts of the country. And so Iowa doesn't really choose the candidate for president. It just sort of says, here are three people that we like in the Democratic and Republican parties. And you guys now go ahead, you guys and gals in New Hampshire and South Carolina and Nevada and then Super Tuesday. Those are the states that really put the nail in the coffin, let's say.
But you get your momentum in Iowa.
Oh, you mentioned the word, the Big Mo. The Big Mo is because the media is crazy, and they all come here, and they come from every part of the world. I did a Spanish Basque radio station interview today. Basque. And the woman said, they've never heard of Iowa, and they have no idea how that works. Can you please explain it for our Basque radio listeners? And so the media comes and, of course, reports what these candidates are doing, what they're eating. It's information that can be gathered in small settings where the candidates are talking to individuals. And it gives people in the rest of the United States more insight, I think, into the candidates than if they were running in a humongous state mm-hmm. with a primary and nothing but television as the medium for reaching voters. I think it's a nice way to do it.
Okay, well, since you've already explained it for the Basque audience, now can you, for our audience, do the thing that we have to do every 4 years, which is explain how the caucus works exactly?
It's easy but complicated in execution. The Republicans have a very easy system, which is on caucus night, they show up at their precinct, and they show up, and the Republicans come in, and there are a few sort of speeches made, but then they vote on a ballot for their preferred candidate. The votes are counted, and then the party reports the results from all of those boxes where the people voted. The Democrats have a really complex system in order to create opportunities for more diverse candidates and more participation. So you come in, you actually are asked to declare the candidate that you are going to vote for. And then the person running the caucus begins to count the number of people who said they're going to vote for, let's say, Tom Steyer, or the number that are going to vote for Joe Biden. And those candidates have to have 15% of the number of people that are attending that particular precinct. So there's a 15%, what they call a viability rule. And that means if you have 14 or 13%, you're not viable. And therefore, if you're voting for that candidate, you now have to switch and go support one of the others that is viable. And that sometimes takes a long time to do that. And then there is a mathematical process that I understand that Albert Einstein, when he heard about it, said, I don't understand any of this. It's the most complicated mathematics, because a graduate student from Iowa State University was put in charge of writing the equation for what are called delegate equivalents. And so on caucus night, what you're really getting is a reading of the mood of Iowa Democrats, or in this case, Republicans will also be there, and the record of their judgment in Iowa. 1, 2, 3. David Yepsen, who's a great reporter, one of the best in the world, I think, politically, once said that, you know, there are three tickets out of Iowa. You know, there's a first class ticket and, you know, the next business class, and then the last down by the bathrooms in the back of the plane. And those three have a pretty good chance when they get to New Hampshire of reversing the results. And so Obama wins in Iowa, but Hillary Clinton wins in New Hampshire. And then it's off to the races. I think that particular contest was fascinating because Obama and Hillary Clinton, of course, fought it out until the last delegate in either the Virgin Islands or Guam, I can't remember which, and he became the candidate and he became a two-term president.
That is Stefan Schmidt, who is professor of political science at Iowa State University, joining us to talk about the caucuses. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And you can hear all of our coverage from Iowa at hereandnow.org.